Welcome to the Almost Forgotten Podcast, and I am your host, Professor Darryl Brackeen Jr., and it is my absolute honor to be with each and every one of you during this Black History Month. And we're going to keep continuing with our Black History lecture series here on the Almost Forgotten Podcast, where you can find where any podcasts are being shown or heard. You can find that at Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and anywhere else. Again, this podcast is based off of my book, The Almost Forgotten, America's First Black American Congressman, The Reconstruction Period, and The Dawn of the Black Political Age. And this is going to be a continuing conversation as we begin to navigate the origin story of Black history during this very crucial time. You can find my book available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and anywhere else books are being sold. And if you have any interest in learning about myself, I'm asking that you please go back to episodes 1, 2, 3, where I give an overview about my academic credentials and background and everything else you'd like to know about me personally as it pertains to the area of academics and teaching and lecturing as a professor at several universities and colleges, primarily in the New England area. So we're going to jump right in to the next part of this series. We heavily covered a conversation concerning the resistance of Black American history leaders throughout history, that is. And we began to have a deep conversation about leaders on the African continent that resisted the colonizing forces over time. And this becomes a vital conversation as we begin to express and to review additional kingdoms that also took part of the resistance of the transatlantic slave trade. We're emphasizing this because oftentimes the framework of Black American history is that we were kidnapped, thrown on a boat, almost as if there was no defense, or that there was no backdrop to the story or explanation. And also, if you go back to original episodes, we acknowledge the full history and those that were a part of the enslavement of Africans and their involvement, including folks that are on the African continent. But it is disproportionately overemphasized as if there's a large population of individuals who engage in that work, and that just is not true, which is why I felt it necessary to shoot this series at all. So we're going to continue in our conversation highlighting kingdoms such as the Kingdom of Ghana today, who absolutely took up arms and absolutely resisted in ways that are often overlooked, stories untold, names have gone on to the ages, but their heroic attributes are often overlooked. So we briefly went over previously in previous episodes, the Kingdom of Ngondo, the Kingdom of Matamba, and all of its earlier leaders, showing that there are kings and queens that engaged in this fight of resistance. So today we're going to overview the Kingdom of Ghana. Specifically, this region is known as the Gold Coast. And during this era of the transatlantic slave trade, employed various strategies of resistance to combat the slave trade during this time period as well. The Gold Coast, as it was known towards the Europeans, was a significant source for slaves. So this is essentially where They did many of the slave trading, and there are existing buildings, if you were to go to Ghana, that are very much shadows of the past that are very much present. And you can see the pathways and the buildings that were built based on the backs of the kidnapping of Africans. Now, you should know the Kingdom of Ghana had a military resistance. There were communities and kingdoms that were along this Gold Coast, such as the Ashanti Empire, that actively resisted against European attempts to capture slaves. And it was done through military means. So, no, there were not any meek or meager individuals who simply sat back and let it happen. That just simply is not the case. And you'll find that the military resistance, they fought against those European incursions time and time again, pushing away the slave raiding parties that often happen. And of course, they had to be armed in this conflict to protect their people. Another interesting perspective concerning the Kingdom of Ghana is that they began to build fortifications and defensive structures in order to protect communities, as many communities as they could, and to protect larger states, building these fortifications and defensive structures along the coast in order to at least slow down the attempt of the slave raid and the European overthrow, essentially, of these locations and time periods. So these fortresses were strategically located, providing that protection to monitor the activities of European slave traders during this time. Additionally, you'll find that the Kingdom of Ghana also, much like the Kingdom of Ngando and the Kingdom of Matamba, had strategic alliances with some European powers, initially hoping that these alliances would protect them long term, but it's as the Portuguese did with the Kingdom of Ngando, it really just simply opened the door for an increased opportunity for European powers to attack them with a double-edged sword, and breaking their word and alliances, all for the name of slave trading interests. Within this time period, you'll find that there were communities that were thriving in a way in which that they had to begin to migrate and essentially become hidden communities. Some of these communities went into hiding in order to avoid being captured by the slave traders, and they established settlements deep within the interior of the African continent, away from the coastal areas where European slavers were beginning to be more active in their activity. These hidden communities became known as maroon communities, and they often resisted capture if and when discovered. You'll hear this term maroon in particular in the Caribbean, so it's interesting that its early origins are found on the African continent at first, but you'll see the resistance of African communities within the Caribbean because of the large concentration and the less places for people to go and engage in the combat, that they were often referred to as maroons, individuals who would hide in certain strategic locations on the land that they were in. A little later on, in terms of the cultural preservation, you'll find that Africans on the Gold Coast also sought to preserve their culture and their heritage as a form of resistance. And in particular, the Kingdom of Ngando, the Kingdom of Ghana, and other locations, you will see the repetition of cultural heritage that is brought on in the Caribbean islands, South America, as well as North America. And you'll see that play out in many different places in different ways, which we'll discuss in future lectures as we continue to review the Black American experience. Ultimately, you'll find that even if individuals were captured, you will find that essentially they began to develop strategies of a way of escape and or rebellion. So there are various forms of resistance that happen, and escape attempts, revolts, and acts of sabotage in order to disrupt the slave trade and the plantation system. So oftentimes, individuals coming from the Kingdom of Ghana and other Gold Coast territories weaponize their minds in order to strategize and collaborate amongst each other in order to find ways of escape and rebellion movements. And in the future, you'll find that the Kingdom of Ghana and its leaders begin to try to have conversations on the America, in the American continent, on the American continent, with abolitionist movements a little later on, which we'll get into as well. Now, I would like to introduce us to our first leader within Ghana who resisted the slave trade and the European colonization during this time period. Now, there is very little limited knowledge about his reign, but I did want to note his name is King Ansa of Ghana, and he reigns during the period of 1470 to 1486, and his relationship is with the Fanta people, who began to watch out for the European ships, and they ended up preventing many ships coming ashore as a strategy to deter folks from being kidnapped in their area and continent. Many other African leaders did not permit Europeans in their kingdoms either, but had very little resources to long-term ultimately defeat the Europeans at this game. But in particular, you'll note that King Ansa attacked the ships themselves. So if there's no ships to carry people away, ultimately, you can't kidnap the people. So what better strategy to utilize than something as this? So he's the first leader that I wanted to introduce during this time period. Now, some other leaders that I want to introduce at this time is Nana Afori Atta. He was a prominent leader of the Akim Kingdom in present-day Ghana. Nana Afori Atta is known for his strong opposition to the slave trade and his efforts to protect his people from enslavement by the European slave traders. Obviously, I don't have a photo of him, but it is in the tradition of African-American culture, Black American culture, and African culture to remember these individuals by invoking their names and stating names. And quite fortunately, we have the opportunity of knowing the names of this great leader. The next leader is a woman, another warrior queen. I tell you, we have just been given a great opportunity to be introduced to warrior queens. It's just amazing how many women were empowered in leadership in the African continent, and to be able to embrace that even in present day, the tradition of Black American culture and not adopting this European very centralized idea that women could not be empowered. That is just not the history or tradition of the African continent, although there were some tribes and kingdoms that resisted it. But you'll find that eventually over time, many of the African tribes and kingdoms end up with powerful women at the helm. And I want to introduce her. Her name is Nana Ya Asante Wa. Beautiful name. And she is known for her leadership during the Ashanti British time period. This time period was known for its war on the Golden Stool in the 1900s. So this is a little later on. But she represented the Ashanti people during historic resistance of enslavement. And their determination was just so phenomenal to protect the kingdom from European colonial forces during this time period. So it's just really an absolute wonder to say her name, Nana Ya Asante Wa. That's beautiful. And the next name I would like to invoke is another Ashanti leader by the name of Osei Tutu Kwame. He was an Ashanti leader who played a crucial role in resisting European encroachment of the slave trade as well. And he worked towards unifying the larger Ashanti kingdom and strengthen its defenses against the European forces. The next historical figure that I wanted to highlight goes by the name of Ni Ai Kwe Parki. Now, there aren't too many historical figures that are mentioned that has such an impact as a writer and as a poet. So it's very rare to have this kind of information at our disposal. And what we found is that this Ghanaian writer and poet, who was a leader and a historical figure during this time, had explored the themes of slavery and the history of resistance through his literary works, therefore shedding the light on historical experiences of Africans during the slave trade. Which leads me to also want to offer the idea that often is pitched and said that there wasn't written things. That just clearly is not true. And you should be suspicious of any historian or individual that tells you there is no written story available, or that there is no trace of these certain things. It's just very convenient that the other side of the story that's often being told happens to just go missing or end up in a fire mysteriously and a series of other things. So just don't believe everything you see and hear. The next leader that I would like to introduce is Ola Oda Equiano. Now, though not from Ghana themselves, Equiano was an African who was enslaved and later became a prominent abolitionist. And his autobiography, entitled The Interesting Narrative of the Life of Olada Equiano, detailed his own experiences as a slave and highlighting his advocacy for the abolition of the transatlantic slave trade. And it was because of his work that actually made great impact for the abolitionist movement a little later on. In particular, and the story ends up actually impacting greatly in Great Britain in particular, and the direct primary sources was absolutely something that was needed in order to abolish slavery, in particular in Great Britain, and later on, much later on, unfortunately, through war in the Americas. So, we're going to now introduce another region on the African continent, the region of Fouta Toro, which is northern Senegal. And it has a history of resistance to slavery during this very time period as well. They were not simply just sitting by, folks. You have to know that there was clearly acts of resistance that was happening. And in this region, it was home to several ethnic groups, including the Fulani people, who played a significant role in opposing the enslavement of their people. And we're going to introduce some key aspects to the Futoro region and their resistance to slavery. So in particular, the Fulani leadership in Fouta Toro was organized in various kingdoms and chiefdoms, and they had a strong leader who resisted the capture and enslavement of their people. And prominent leaders such as Alpha Mola Balde, Alpha Yaya, opposed the slave trade and sought to protect those communities. And one way that we see the Fulani people in the Fouta Toro region resist is through the act of religious resistance. This is a different perspective that isn't always highlighted. And what you'll find is the Fulani, Islam played a very crucial role in their resistance to slavery. And even those who end up captured, they very much carry this Islamic religious tradition over to where they are. You'll find that even in the names of future ancestors in the Americans continent in particular, in the southern part of America, you'll find messages from the Islamic tradition, even within Christian church settings as well. And we'll get into that a little later when we talk about the first African church, First Baptist African Church in Savannah, Georgia, in particular, where you'll find Islamic writing all throughout, actually the very being of the church building, which is absolutely phenomenal. The Fulani also began to create strategic alliances in this region, and of course with neighboring ethnic groups and some European powers to protect their territories from slave trade within that time. And the Futuro region also played in part a sort of a refuge for free slaves. Over time, you'll hear the establishment of Liberia, and that's a separate conversation that'll come up a little later on. But on the African continent itself, if there were individuals that were able to escape the slave raiders, this is the place that they really wanted to go to in order to escape the plantation or the slave ships and find sanctuary there. And the constant conflict with the slave traders, with the Fulani people, just continued in battles and skirmishes. And again, it just was not uncommon on the Gold Coast here. The next form of resistance that the Fulani people leveraged was that of intellectual and ideological resistance. So it's from some Fula scholars and intellectuals of Futuro used their influence to condemn slavery and promote the idea of African freedom. They wrote letters, they wrote treatises, they wrote poetry to raise the awareness of the inhumanity of the slave trade. Folks, Islam is often overlooked in this conversation. It is through the Islamic faith that many people, millions of people, end up being literate in terms of being able to express a written form outside of their oral traditions. So this is vitally important to note that this religion singularly preserves many of the traditions that over time are often overlooked, unspoken of. And it is Futuro, like many other regions during the 19th century, that they were one of the first areas to see a drastic reduction in the slave trade because of their constant battling with the European colonizers, but that still did not totally wash away the colonization effect that would happen during this time period. But that's a different lecture series for a different time. So you'll see that these leaders were very much a part of this resistance period. So the first leader in this location that I would like to introduce to you all is Abel Kader Kane. And he is primarily recognized for his resistance against European colonialism. And it's through his efforts Islamic faith and tradition that you'll see an emphasis and teachings about abolishing slavery and the fair treatment for all individuals. And his impact is forever known throughout this time period because of his beliefs. And he also opposed deeply to colonization. And it's through his resistance to colonization, in particular to the French expansion within his area, because the French was also exploiting the African resources of the land and partaking in their share of kidnapping and ripping individuals of their lives by throwing them into the slave trade. So his battles primarily were with the French during this time period. So he organized a very heavy military resistance to these forces over time, but he sought to also ensure that the traditional societies that existed were preserved in the tradition of the Islamic faith, as well as the socio-political structures remain intact despite the attack on their people during this time. And it increased that many of the Islamic figures during this time discouraged enslavement, which, remember, there was the ancient version of enslavement based on tribal warfare, and it's being mixed in with this new colonized systematic racist version that's being presented. And this leader, he is increasing the teachings that enslavement, period, is wrong. So it's being taken away out of the political structure during this time period. So that's a major point that needs to be highlighted. So he, of course, he reinforces and the rejection of these practices, which again is contrary to their religious norms. Now, as we wrap up today, the subject matter of Black history seeking to combat systematic racism and white supremacy is the absolute reason for the launching of this series at all. What I was beginning to see, even in American society, is that they're trying to roll back Black American history and revise it in a way that is detrimental to every person, every human being's existence. And we need to be able to actively stand up and present the truth. So I just want to thank each and every one of you for engaging in this Black History Lecture Series. Some people comment without actually looking and engaging in what's actually happening. So please like and share and engage and tell people to actually watch it and engage what's happening, because what you'll find is that we're presenting the other side of the story, incorporating a more holistic approach to Black American history overall. So again, we need you all to subscribe to Brakeem TV. We need you all to share this content and this lecture series to get as far and wide as possible. If you are interested or you're interested in having a community conversation, a lecture, or even provide an opportunity to speak to your local community, you can email us at management@djbjmotivationalmedia.com, and you can follow us on all platforms at Brakeem TV. This ends the Almost Forgotten podcast series, Black History Lecture Series, highlighting the acts of resistance. And we will come back with our next episode very, very soon. Thank you. Please like, share, and provide some contact and feedback about information that we provided today. Thank you so very much. And remember, Black history is American history. And we cannot know where we're going unless we know where we have been. Have a good one.